Buongiorno everybody and welcome. Thank you for taking the time to come here and spend about 75 minutes learning about Azure Active Directory and what it can do for your applications. My name is Vittorio Bertocci. Clearly from my accent, I am from Redmond. And I take care of various identity libraries for developers in the Azure Active Directory team. But enough about me. How about you guys? How many of you are developers? Very good. For everybody else, sorry, you got the wrong turn. Probably you had to turn right instead of left. It is a fantastic time to be a developer today. There has never been a better time. Now, anything that comes to mind, you can deploy it in the pocket of your neighbor. Literally, like everybody goes around with a machine capable of realizing your vision. You can write your piece of app and make it available to them. You can put stuff in the cloud with very little cost or at no cost. You can learn stuff for like, the only limit is the time available because otherwise you can just spend the time learning new stuff, which is fantastic. And like there are more JavaScript libraries than there are saints in the Italian calendar. So it's fantastic, or is it? I don't know about you guys, but I will admit it freely, I am occasionally overwhelmed. Like when I needed to write something, I always have a dilemma of like, should I write it? Should I look up on the internet if there is already a library that does this? And this can be a bit paralyzing, like you spend cycles on that. And especially given that I own libraries that deal with something that is in the critical path of everything. Like you need identity for pretty much anything that has distributed computing in it. Then I feel these especially hard. Like anybody who is doing any option will come to me and ask me, do you have an SDK for me? And these can be overwhelming. And in this session, I'm going to walk you through at least four different application architectures, which are quite different from each other. And if we would not search for some kind of underlying structure, we would end up reinventing the wheel every time something changes. Now, the good news is all these application architectures that you have available today aren't really random variations. There is arbitrary variation. Those are mostly evolutions, mutations that have been selected because they work. Like applications evolved just like anything else. And if we can identify the basics of like the basic shapes, the basic plans, and see how they changed, then we'll see that securing this application is actually always doing the same thing. It just happens to look slightly different because it has to adapt to the shape of a new app. But in the end, you'll see that it's all pretty straightforward. Or at least, that's my hope. So this is the agenda. I'm going to walk you through these four different types of apps. We are going to look at the topology that builds those apps regardless of authentication. And then we are going to apply authentication to it. And in the process, I will also talk about how Azure Active Directory makes these specific tasks easier. Now, how many of you guys went to the introduction to Azure Active Directory yesterday? Very few. All right. For everybody else, I have to apologize, but given the sheer amount of stuff that I have to cover, I'm not going to spend much time, or at all, to introduce the service. Rather, I'll actually use it. If you want an introduction to it, you can go back to the recording. Nasos does a fantastic job at speaking much better than me, so you'll be fine. Let's start with round-trip web apps. Also, this green is nice and relaxing, so let me bask for a moment into it. Ah. I feel bad. Like, to me, it's basically 9 a.m. after the entire night awake. So if I'll say confusing things, is I'm not drunk, I'm jet-lagged. Very good. So here there is the classic, absolutely classic shape that you can expect from round-trip web apps. Like I had a round-trip because today there are many different flavors of web apps. And here I want to emphasize, I'm talking about the good old basic application that runs everything on the server. Basically, how does this work? You have one user with its own little browser, and we assume that the machine of the user is not capable of anything at all, apart from running this browser. It's not strictly true, but let's make this architectural assumption. Then on the server, we actually run pretty much everything. We run, for using a somewhat out of fashion term, our business logic, which is whatever is actually making our application useful. Like, what is this application for? I don't know. Maybe it's rendering, or maybe it's folding molecules, or maybe it's expense note. That thing is the business logic part. And then, of course, there is what else? Let's stay awake. What else do I need for running an app? I can hear the other speaker, but I can't hear you guys. Data. I do need data, but I'm going to be discriminatory, and I will not talk about that. Instead, I am going to talk about presentation. Like, without a presentation, of course, all that logic would be kind of hard to use for the user. And the defining characteristic of this architecture is I have everything in the server. And as a user, if I want to consume this thing, I've got a package deal. Let's say that what happens is that I point my fantastic browser to this page. The server does its thing, which means both the business logic and the presentation, and then sends me back everything. And that's pretty much it. My application just does this back and forth. Now, how do you secure this thing? Again, this is the easy stuff. You'll see in 1 hour, if you survive, that this stuff is going to be more interesting. But I have to start from here. Now, how do you normally secure this thing? Let's assume that you have somewhere a repository of the users that you want to authenticate with this app. And given that my sponsor is Microsoft, I will assume it's Active Directory, Azure Active Directory specifically. And what happens is that you will have some kind of interception layer which lives in front of your server and that enforces that whomever calls has to be authenticated. And so what happens is that you make the call that we did before, but instead of giving the resource back, you will actually detect that the user is not authenticated and use the logic in that interception layer to redirect the user because this app only understands redirects. That's the only thing it can do, to what we call the identity provider. Here, this authority will do whatever it deems necessary to establish the identity of a user. Could be gathering username and password, could be I'm on the internet, so Kerberos takes care of that. Could be that I am a paranoid military and I have to use a weird crypto. It doesn't matter. What matters is that the end result is what we call a security token. This is just a bunch of bytes which are cryptographically signed so that anybody can verify that they are coming from this authority. And this thing gets bounced back to the application. That interception layer verifies the token, and if it likes it, it issues something that unfortunately I can only dream of because I'm on a diet. A cookie. And this cookie will now be saved in the context of a browser, and this will allow us to create, let's see if I manage to do it, a pipe. And then every time I will be sending my cookie, and as a reward, I will get back my HTML. Very straightforward. No science fiction, right? Yes. Thank you, thank you. Otherwise, with the lights, I don't see you, and I think that I'm alone. So if you don't make a bit of noise, I get kind of scared. Such a huge place. It is a huge place, isn't it? Okay, so here there is a bit more specifically Azure Active Directory. How does it do this? Well, substantially, you can see all those lollipops. Those lollipops represent endpoints. Endpoints that Azure Active Directory exposes. All those endpoints implement different security protocols. And all the ones that I put in there, apart from the one with a T, which I somewhat forgot, are protocols that I can use for enacting the architecture which I shown earlier. But in order to do so, Azure Active Directory is somewhat picky. The first thing I have to do is to let the directory know about the existence of my application. This is a security measure. Every time I'm asked as a directory to issue a token, I have to know the identity of everybody involved, and that includes the application itself. So the first thing I have to do is to go in Azure AD and provision, sorry for my R, an entry for my application. How do I do that? Well, here there's a moment in which I hope that the internet actually works. So pray for me. What you see in here is the Azure portal. Classic Azure portal, which I'm sure you have used for many other tasks. How many of you guys ever used the Azure portal? Thank you. As a shareholder, I am grateful. And in the Azure portal, there is a section specific to Active Directory, and that's where we are right now. It's in here. You recognize it from the little logo. Here I have my list of directories. I will pick my favorite directory, which is this developer tenant. And here I have my list of applications. Creating one entry for an application is very, very easy. I hit this Add button. I'm asked something, but I will typically ignore it and always click the first link. That will put me in trouble more often than not. Now, here, basically, you are presented a choice that for which, if you are a developer, you pick the first one. If you are an IT pro or like a close partner, you choose the other two. So always choose the first. Oops, I'm being recorded, am I not? My colleagues are going to be mad. So here, you just have a couple of options. Azure Active Directory, as of today, understands two different type of apps, and we'll see both today. The first one is web application or web API. We are doing a web app, so we'll pick it. We'll see the native client application later in the day. You can give random names as long as they are not obscene. Otherwise, it will not allow you. I tried. And here, you just specify the couple of things that the directory needs to know in order to interact with your application using any of those protocols. The first parameter is the truly important one. It is the address of your application. If you don't specify the correct address, then you will not get back a token, because the directory will only send tokens to that address. So very important to get it right. So of course, I'm going to write something random. Mostly because in my sample, I already have stuff pre-configured. So that's why I'm so sport-like in this respect. And then the App ID URI is just an identifier. As long as it is unique, you are fine. Also, it has to be a URI. And that's it. You look at that thing spinning for a couple of seconds, and ta-da, now I have one entry in my directory. We'll see what to do with it in a second. Now that I have this entry, basically, the other thing I have to do is to choose what to use here. And long story short, actually, I'll tell you later. I'll just tell you that depending on what you choose here, you will determine which endpoints you are going to work with. Because we have interceptors for OpenID Connect, interceptors for WS Fed. We do not have one for SAML, but you can use stuff from other platforms like Java. Now, the interception layers which we offer have an interesting characteristic. They are very easy to configure, and one thing that you have to pass to them is the name of a directory that you want to work with. So say that you are Contoso, you call your directory Contoso, then here you'd write login windows.net/contoso on microsoft.com. And now thanks to this information, this interceptor will, out of band, come here and consult that document. That document is called a metadata document. It contains the description from the protocol perspective of those endpoints. So this interceptor layer will acquire information from that metadata document, and then it will be capable of telling tokens correctly issued from that authority from everybody else. So in other words, it will be capable of validating tokens. And this reduces the amount of config that you have to do by hand. And so here, the dance is exactly as I described it earlier. Make my request, depending on what I'm configured of, say that I used OpenID Connect, I get redirected to this endpoint, I get my UX, I sign in, I get back the token, and the token gets sent in here, and this guy issues a cookie. And the game closes. How many of you guys work on non-Microsoft platforms? Can you extend fully the arm so I can see if you guys are actually here? One, two, and a half, five. Excellent. How many of you Java? One, Node.js. Still one. Well, I should have asked on the server side. I know your game. You're probably triggering mobile apps. There will be stuff for you in a second. But anyway, on other platforms, as long as you stick with the protocol that we support, OpenID Connect, XAML, WSFed, then that's fine. You can use whatever library you want. It will work most of the times. And in .NET, you have mostly two options. We have one traditional option, which is Windows Identity Foundation. How many of you guys ever used it? Oh, wow, you know everything already. That's a great product. It's very nice. It's part of the .NET framework. Hence, it's going to be supported basically for a geological era. So it's a safe bet. You can go with it. It will work. However, in just the last few months, we released an update to our object model, which is far more modern, far easier to use, and also I played a part in shipping it, so I'm very proud of it. And so I will clearly try to push it on you. And that's the ASP.NET OWIN security components. How many of you guys used OWIN already? All right, some. I'll be interested in your feedback. So this image somewhat summarizes what we've been trying to do with this new object model. Now, in Windows Identity Foundation, we give you basically what you'd see in the cockpit of a Boeing 747 or some other models. Like, all of that stuff is somewhat needed. Like, if you want to deal with identity and security, those knobs, there is a scenario for which if you don't have that knob, you are in trouble. However, in the vast majority of the users, you don't need to see all of that stuff. There will be just a couple of controls that you want to use all the time, and the other ones are not going to be an added value. They're going to ruin the noise signal ratio. So here, if you look at this image, you can see precisely what we've been trying to do. If most of the time you needed to change the channel to move the volume and to turn on and off, that's what you should see. And if you wanted to see the other buttons, they are still there. You just need to peel a couple of layers. So we basically tried to do the same thing. And here there is the high level, how you use OpenID Connect, OWIN middleware for these kind of tasks. First, you have a pipeline. When you do these kind of things, you always deal with a pipeline. The first thing that you do is you pass a session management, something which basically deals with creating and maintaining that cookie that I mentioned. And then on top of that, you add the protocol proper. Now, the part that creates the cookie in the end doesn't really care about whether you obtain the token using XAML or WSFed or OpenID Connect. Its job is just to create this cookie and validate it. And then the protocol proper is something that is covered by another middleware, and you typically add it there. And this is not like a fiction, ladies and gentlemen. This is actual code pasted straight from a sample. So if it looks not demo-like, that's because it's real code. But for being a real code, it's fantastically short, let's face it. You have the first line, which basically just say, I want to create one validation pipeline. With Owen, you can create more than one so that you can slice your app and use different protocols. Let's not go there. But you create this first initialization to make sure that all the middleware that you will add will be on the same pipeline. The second line is, I want to use the cookie middleware as a way of tracking my session. The third one is the one that says, I want to use Operady Connect. And the only info that I need to provide are those two entries. Now, if you would put a comma there and do control space for the IntelliSense, you'll see that we have a boatload of other stuff in there. But it's there only if you want it. You are, it's not like in your face like we did it in Windows Identity Foundation. And those two values are just the identifier of your app as it has been assigned from Azure Active Directory and the directory that I want to use, so the famous contoso.com. And to take a look at what we had in here, here I have my application, the one that I created earlier. And here is the client ID. So all I need to do once I create the app is to copy this client ID and paste it back into my Owen middleware initialization. Very simple. All right. And then for protecting a resource, you use the classic tools that you have in ASP.NET. So authorize. And you can use whatever else. Like if you want to use the web config authorization element, you can use that as well. Anything that triggers the ease authenticated requirement will work. I should have connected the clicker. And that's the basic case. Then if you want to drive things with explicit entries, so not protecting a controller, and then when somebody tries to access it, it triggers off. Say that you actually want to have a sign-in button. That's the code behind. In one case, you just trigger the challenge. You pass whatever you want to come back to. And that's it. If you want to trigger a sign-out, you just call sign-out. And given that it is a generic sign-out function, you have to specify which middleware you want to act on the sign-out. And in this case, the OpenID Connect will trigger the OpenID Connect specific sign-out flow. The cookie part is simply going to get rid of the session. So very straightforward. And I know you don't believe me, so I'll have to show you. So we don't want this one yet. Also, we don't want this one. But we want this guy. Now, what I'm going to use here are only samples that are in GitHub. All of our samples are in GitHub. I will not use any demo which I flaunt over your face and then never give you the code, as it often happens in these conferences. Everything that you have in here, you can open your device of choice, go on GitHub/AzureAD samples, and you'll find exactly the same code in here, with a difference that here I'm using my tenant. So once you download that, you have to use it on your tenant. So here I have a classic web app, normal structure. The main interesting part lives in here. There is this file, startup of CS. And if I go there, and maybe I crank up the font a bit, can you see OK from the back? Very good. It was a test to see if you are alive. Also, if you understand when I speak, because my accent, I'm told, is pretty challenging, for which I apologize. Here you can see precisely the code that I mentioned earlier. The only difference is that I'm pulling this stuff out from my web config. But it's not the web config that we had in Windows Identity Foundation. Those are the app settings. So if I'd want to hard code these, I could do it. If I would want to pull it out from a provider, I can also do it. I have complete freedom on how to do it. And if I just hit the five, this will probably not be very interesting. Like usually when identity demos work, that's when they are boring. So I hope for boring. So if I click sign in here, I can choose to be Guido. And voila, I'm signed in. So for you to do the same, you just needed to clone this repository or download the zip. And then you go on the portal and you do the same stuff I've done. And then you cut and paste in the web config the client ID and the value of your tenant. That's it. That's all you have to do for making this work. Now, Visual Studio also offers shortcuts for people that are truly lazy and they don't want to do that. Visual Studio will do it on your behalf. Currently, Visual Studio is still using Windows Identity Foundation, so it will not generate this such neat and small footprint code. However, we'll update this soon. Well, if I have my way, soon. Otherwise, we'll have to wait. So if you give me mails and feedback saying, please do it, I can use it as a bargaining weapon with ASP.NET guys. So please help. Also, if you want to write in the feedback that my machine is slow and I need a new one, I'd be very appreciative. Okay, so that was our most basic structure, the round-trip web app. Now, let's take a look at its next evolution. Now, at this point, say that this application architecture has been very successful. And so now the sea is full of these kind of fishes. And so let's say that I have another one here, and I don't have a lot of room here, so let's just imagine that those two are 2,000. Very good. Now, it becomes interesting that there is so much logic available, and that logic is somewhat, in this model, only accessible through its own presentation layer. Let's say that I have my own ExpenseNote app, and there I have Facebook. And say that for some odd reason, I would like from my accounting app to actually integrate with some of the things that Facebook has. Like, for example, I track everywhere you have been, and then I know how to convert from a currency where you were. I just made this up. Now, this thing forced the evolution for mechanisms for actually exposing that logic, also not through its own presentation, but for consumption from other servers, for server-to-server flows. And here, I'm not saying anything controversial, because we experience this every day. How many of you guys have a Facebook account? Lots. And how many of you ever used that account for accessing some other resource? There you go. So that's exactly what I'm talking about. So the next step in the evolution of distributed systems is basically, on top of this capability, we also want to add this capability, having server-side calling another server-side. And for Occam Razor, we want, for a moment, to forget about this guy. So that's where things evolved. Now, let's take a look, security-wise, what that means. How many of you guys know how the protocol, the OAuth protocol actually works? Not a lot. Well, for everybody else, in a couple of minutes, you will know. You'll never have any use of it, because our libraries wrap everything. But hey, you'll be able to tell your friends in front of your pint, I know OAuth. I tried it as opening line often, and I don't know if it's my nose or the opening line is lousy, but it never brings me anywhere. So buyer beware. So let's assume that the user is already signed in with the app. So we will not look at sign-in. Sign-in is already solved. Now what we want to do is have that business logic to have access to that other business logic. Now, in offer, how does that work? Let's assume that this resource, the resource on top, is managed through that authority that we have on that side. So in order to access that thing, in order to go beyond its own chevron, we need to get a token that will actually be trusted by that resource. So auth does this in the following pattern. Once you are in this application and you are doing the action which requires access, you are redirected to this auth endpoint. Auth defines two endpoints, the authorization endpoint and the token endpoint. The authorization endpoint actually serves HTML. It serves the UI. And it's used for, first, authenticating the user, and then, depending on the circumstances, asking to the user if the user consents for this application to gain access to the resource it's trying to access. This is a new concept which we did not have in the sign-in world. And if that happens, let's see if I have a right click button. Yep. What happens is that the user is issued a code. A code is just an opaque string which is used as a reminder for the authority to see that the user actually consented for this thing to happen. And then this code is shipped back to the backend here. And from this moment on, everything happens on the server. So we are no longer doing any UX. Now the server will actually emit a request to this other endpoint, the token endpoint, and it will attach a code. Together with the code, it will identify itself. How? Substantially by sending an ID, the same client ID we have seen earlier, and its own credentials, whatever that might be. Can be a flat key, can be a password, can be a certificate. Doesn't matter. Anyway, those are ways that the authority leverages for knowing who's the requester. And we call this a confidential client because a confidential client is capable of using a key. We'll see that in the case of mobile apps, those are public clients because you can't trust a device to protect a key. So at this point, the token endpoint will be happy with this thing and will reward us with a couple of tokens. Now, these couple of tokens are called the access token and the refresh token. Now, the access token is this guy, and it's basically what is used for accessing our resource. Now, note that this is all happening server to server. So the logic in that chevron cannot be the same logic that we used below. When you are doing a sign-in, that thing, if you are trying to hit on a resource and you are not authenticated, will generate a 302. It will redirect your browser. But in that case, there is no browser. This is a server-to-server flow. So if I hit a resource and I'm not authorized, I get a 403. Or if I'm not authenticated, I get a 401. So different logic. But anyway, now that I have my token, I'm happy. I can access this thing. Now, interestingly, given that the user might at any time decide to revoke their permission, or in a business context, say that that resource was exchanged and the user is an employee of that company, and the user gets fired, leaves the company, loses the device, whatever happens, and then we want to revoke access from the top to that service, now that we give them a token, we are in trouble, because we have no way of communicating to the resource that that token is no longer good. So how do we ameliorate? See, I've learned a big English word. Did I get my credibility higher now? The situation. Basically, what we do is we make the validity window for the access token reasonably short. In AAD, it's 1 hour. So that means that this application can enjoy the ride for 1 hour. And after 1 hour, that token will expire. And so it will be forced to go back to the authority. And if the authority decides that it's no longer the case, then they'll have to re-authenticate. Now, that's where that second token comes into play. That second token is called refresh token. And it can be used by applications to, as the name implies, refresh the access token. I go back with this refresh token and also with my credentials. And the server can say, OK, you are one that obtained this token in the past. Let me look up if this user is still OK with you doing this. And if it is, you get back again a new set of tokens, including a new refresh token, which now will have a sliding expiration. So that if you use this trick often enough, that refresh token can last for like 90 days. That's pretty good. 90 days in which the user doesn't have to be prompted again. But if at any time you need to revoke, you can do it within 1 hour. Pretty straightforward. So that's how OAuth works in general. Now let's look at AAD. AAD still needs to know everything that's going on. Just like before we had to provision the application, now we have to provision both the resource and the client. Now there is an interesting twist here, which is the resource can expose different operations that you can do with it. Whereas before, we were just signing in, so there's not much to say, I'm signing in. Here, depending on the resource, I might do different stuff. So for example, say that we are accessing Exchange. Exchange can do many different things. And here I have just a couple of examples. The two permissions, we call them, you can require for could be like, I want to be able to read the user email, or I want to send the email as on behalf of the user. Or you can do things like complete control of the mailbox, stuff like that. So the director needs to know about the existing of the resource, needs to know about the permissions, the things you can do with that resource. And then the system needs to know about the client as well, which I forgot to add in the clip art. So this is the client. Sorry, doesn't look too good. And together with a client, you have to declare which resources this client requires access to and with which privileges. So in this specific case, we are saying our app wants to have access to Exchange Online and specifically wants to read the user's email. Reminds me of one of our competitors. I will not say which one because I don't want to be sued. And this thing is going to be used for rendering the consent page. I'm sure that you have this experience that when you get prompted by Facebook because some of your no good friends are trying to make you waste time on those stupid little games, if you find a way of blocking those guys, please tell me. Because they ruin the pleasure of being on Facebook. But anyway, you get those dialogue and you see useless game number one wants to list all the things that they want to do to mess with your Facebook. Now, here, if you transfer these in the business context, the thing that you see in here, I want Exchange and I want to read users, is what's used for rendering this consent page so that the user knows what they are getting into. And one interesting thing is if an administrator provisions this, then the user does not see this prompt because the administrator just gives in advance the permission. Given that those are resources that are not just yours, but they are also the company, so the administrator has the power of doing that. Whereas in Facebook, it's only personal stuff, so only you can say yes, no. Great. And that's pretty much it. So, coming back here. These two legs are made according to the OAuth protocol, and the OAuth protocol has big, interesting blank spaces that every vendor has to fill because they didn't feel like they wanted to specify everything. So long story short, those two lines can be pretty complicated. You can decide to hit the wire and build everything yourself. It's not impossible. But you don't have to because we have libraries for you that do that. Now, those libraries, in my opinion, are more interesting when we use them from a native application on devices. So here I'm just going to mention the existence of those libraries because we have to use them. But I will give you the details later. So that's more incentive for you to stick around. Our libraries are called Active Directory Authentication Library so that you don't have to guess what they do. Okay. Those are libraries that can be used for requesting tokens, which was exactly what we were doing from our web application. And they work exclusively with Active Directory, which means ADFS from Windows Server 2012 R2 onward and Azure Active Directory. You can't use it with anybody else because, again, OAuth is not an interoperable standard. Well, it is an interoperable standard, but for a very limited scope, that would not be enough here. And here I will just say that I use this library, but I will not go much into the details of it. And now let me actually show you this thing in action. Here I have one version of the same sample that I've seen earlier with some extra logic in there. There's a logic which does a very neat thing which is possible with OpenID Connect, which is when you sign in with OpenID Connect, you do the dance that we have seen earlier for round trip, in which you get your first token for issuing your cookie. But together with the token, you also get already a code so that you don't need to do this other redirect, but you can just grab this code and redeem it right away for one resource. And now the good news is that once you get a refresh token and you are within Azure Active Directory, that refresh token can be used for getting tokens also for other resources. So that once you get one, you are done. It's like having a Kerberos TGT. You can get as many tokens for as many services as you like, as long as those services trust the same directory. So with OpenID Connect, in one single blow, you get everything, both your first token, but also the token for your backend. And that's what we are doing in this sample. In this sample, we still have our sign-in logic. Let me get there, and then I'll crank up the font. Et voilà. So I have the same initialization logic. Come on. Here we are. Same. But then here I have something new. I have this element, these OpenID Connect notifications. Those are extensibility points that I can use for injecting logic in the pipeline of my validation. And specifically, the notification that I'm implementing here is this authorization code received. This thing comes up, is called, if the authority sends me a code. And here I have my opportunity of redeeming that code for getting a token. And then I can cache this token and I can use it for making my calls. And I will not walk you in the details of the code because I'll do it later for mobile apps. But mostly, the interesting part is this. I just need a couple of lines of code. The first line of code says, I want to work with that specific authority. It's something which creates a moniker which represents my Active Directory instance. And the second line is something that says, I would like to get a token from that instance. And I pass the various parameters that I need. The first one is the code that I received, and the other ones are things like my credentials and stuff like that, all the stuff that I've put in my diagram earlier. Now, the interesting thing is this thing takes care of a protocol on your behalf. You just give it all the various parameters and we craft everything for you. So that's why I said, now you know how OAuth works, but it won't bring you very far because most of the times we'll be taking care of it. And actually, now to be completely serious, it is useful to know how it works because you don't need to know anything in the absolute best case. The moment in which something goes south, if you want to troubleshoot, it's useful to know what's happening behind the scenes. So I wasn't wasting your time. I was giving you useful knowledge. Don't forget that when you fill your events. And now, let's just make a little run of this guy. You'll see that it's not very different from what we were doing earlier. In fact, it's probably going to do exactly the same. In fact, since I didn't close my tab, I'm already signed in. And now if I click on this profile, wait a moment, let me sign out and sign in again. Something is happening. Okay, perfect. In the controller that I just clicked, what happened is that I did call an API, and this API was protected by Azure AD. So I used the token that I obtained through that call notification to perform that call. And the API that I called is called the Directory Graph API. Now, let me show you the call, and then I'll mention a bit more about this API. Let me stop. Let me go in the controller which made the call, which is the user profile controller. Yep. How many of you guys ever worked with web APIs? Very good. So you know exactly what's going on in here. So the first few lines you can ignore for the time being. That's basically just repeating the call that we did earlier. But the difference is that instead of saying acquire token by code, which is what we did earlier, we just say acquire token and don't show me any UX. And this is a trick for us to retrieve tokens from the cache. Given that ADAL, this library, has different ways of obtaining a token without prompting the user, the best strategy you can have is don't ever store tokens on your own. Always ask the library. And this guarantees that you will have the least amount of prompts. So here, we are willfully repeating that call, knowing that we will hit the cache. We will not really be going back and forth. And if at this point the token we are calling would be expired, this thing would transparently use the refresh token behind the scenes, which is also cached as part of this. So I just realized I told you to ignore it, and then I explained how it works. But again, jet lag, don't forget jet lag. Anyway, once I have this token, I just do what a good REST API caller does. I grab it, I add it in a header, and then I just send it. And then the API on the other side will know how to retrieve this thing from the header, will use the logic that I described for retrieving the metadata and knowing how to validate tokens, and will validate the token. So very straightforward. OK. So let's talk for a moment about this API, the Graph API. How many of you guys ever used the Graph APIs? One, just one, and a half. More? Other fractions? You guys don't count. Come on. Was are part of my team. They are here to spy so that if I say something against the establishment, they'll denounce me. You will not get me. The Graph API is, and here I will say something that would make some of my colleagues cringe, but I'll say it anyway. It is the moral equivalent of LDAP in the cloud. It is a way for you to query your directory when you are doing a cloud workload. Why a new API instead of good old LDAP? Well, mostly that's because the cloud is a different environment. From the cloud, you want to have the least amount of expectations about your caller. So the least amount of expectation in the cloud is today HTTP. So if you use a REST API, anybody who can produce HTTP requests and pass responses will be able to call you, which is fantastic. The other thing that is important about this is when you're working with a cloud, you will typically give access to your directory to people that don't really belong to your directory. Say an ISV vendor who creates a SaaS app. This app needs access to your directory in order to perform its functionality, but You can't give them the keys of the kingdom, because who knows what this guy will do. You want to limit the abilities of this thing only to the minimum amount of privileges that you want to give. And LDAP, unfortunately, falls dramatically short in that department. You give your own password, you can do whatever. But we have just seen a trick that you can use for give delegated access to APIs, and the trick is called... I can do this all day, not really, because my knee is bad. OAuth. Given that this is a REST API, we can use precisely the same trick that we used for calling the other API. This can be protected via OAuth. And with OAuth, given that we can ask for permissions, we can define very granular capabilities, we can limit the access to the directory. So that's why is a REST API and not LDAP. Here, many interesting details which you can learn by looking at MSDN. And here, I think that it's interesting to look at how it's structured, because it actually makes sense. The way in which you represent a resource here is by starting from the root, which is graph, windows.net, which is basically the service that you are using. Then the next part is the tenant, or the directory, so contoso.com, classic. Then there is the entity that you want to work with, so in this specific case, users, but you can do applications, you can do all of that stuff. For example, when in Visual Studio you automatically create an entry for your application, you are using this syntax, and the entity that you use is the application. And then everything else is the version of API, and then the OData syntax. How many of you guys ever used OData? Lots, but not everybody. Very good. For everybody else, OData is a clever trick for pushing queries to the server side, so that if you want a specific subset of resources, instead of doing it in classic REST fashion, grabbing the entire thing, bringing it on the client, and then doing JavaScript on the client to filter it, you can, in a very compact syntax, ask the server to do the job for you, so that you get back only the things that you need. Very neat. Blah, blah, blah. Very good. And I already made the demo, so we are good on that department. I've got to accelerate, otherwise I won't show you the cool stuff. Single page applications. How many of you guys use JavaScript? Look at that. AngularJS. Now I'm confused.
Angular, you have asked Angular.
Yes, but the gentleman moved his hand. Trying. It's actually a very, very good area. Okay, so here is where we landed. That was the former iteration. Like we went from fish to amphibians. And now we actually want to walk on land. We want to make the next step in our evolution. And what happened here is that in the meanwhile, the technology in browsers made a quantum leap. Now the browser is no longer just a dumb interpreter. It is something that can actually perform active actions. And so what happens is that we can now disintermediate more complex words. I can now take my presentation, which was running on the server, and instead of having this package deal and do back and forth, I can actually do this trick of moving my presentation on the client. And now that little line, instead of every time having to grab the entire application, which is quite big, I can now have all my UX at once, all the logic for running the UX at once, and then I can hit the server only for the parts that I need. I can change just parts of my page instead of reloading everything. If you ever used email or Outlook web access, you have experienced this magic. Like you click a little element here, and only a part of a page changes. That's thanks to this stuff. Now, how does AAD come into play? Well, there is one flow in OAuth called the implicit grant, which is designed for getting a token to the client. So here I have my client, I can hit my authorization endpoint, and I can get back a token in what we call a fragment. Let's say something that can be seen only by the client. It's not really posted to the server. And now here I can make heavy usage of JavaScript. And when I call my backend, remember, I'm not doing an entire postback. This is no longer a round trip. I can actually make a web API call using JavaScript. And this web API call can attach dynamically a token. So here, I can use the same logic that I used earlier for securing the server-to-server flows, but this time for securing a request from the browser, which is very, very handy. Now, this introduces a number of interesting new challenges. Like, for example, earlier I explained how the refresh token works. Here, there is no refresh token, but my token still lasts 1 hour. What am I going to do with it? Any ideas? Cookies. No, almost. Almost. Good idea. So when I want to renew the token, I know I have to go back to the authorization endpoint because it's the place where tokens are made. But I can't do it with the entire page because that would be against the entire idea of I bring this stuff back into the client. So how do I do that? There is a really clever trick which I can't take credit. I didn't come up with it. But it is clever anyway. And it entails using a hidden iframe. I can have a hidden iframe in my app. And as the gentleman here said, I do have a cookie in the picture. It's simply not a cookie to my app. It is a cookie to the authority. Because when I signed in with the authority, I did establish a session. And that session will be represented by a cookie. So if I have this cookie and I use that iframe, and in the iframe I say, please give me a token without showing any UX, if that cookie is still valid, I will get back a new token. So I will now have a fresh token. So for as long as I have a valid cookie in there, I will be able to refresh tokens. This goes even further. Say that I have more APIs, like I said earlier. Those APIs that didn't go away are still around. And say that I want to call those APIs. Now, there is an interesting complication, which is those APIs now live on a different domain. And so if I want to make a JavaScript call, I need to use what is commonly referred as cores. How many of you guys know what cores is? For everybody else, that's a trick for making calls from JavaScript to other domains. And I can use the exact same mechanism in which I use that iframe and I ask for a token. But in my request, I say, give me a token for this other service. So basically, I now created a way for that browser to perform calls to web APIs, which is pretty awesome. And just a couple of days ago, one of the reasons for which I look like a raccoon, see all this black stuff? Because I've been doing this at night. We released the preview of a JavaScript version of ADAL, which does work in the browser, does exactly what I described, and specifically does this on top of AngularJS, mostly because it is, for what is my understanding, the most commonly used library. If you guys have feedback, you want us to do it on a different stack, please let us know. And I'm sorry? I will tell everything later for a fee. You didn't get away for a fee, huh? This mic is low. Okay, so there are other things you need to do if you want to protect your own API. Like what we have seen earlier is calling the Graph API. The Graph API is what we call pre-provisioned. It comes with the package. But if you want to create your own API, you have to let they directly know about this API. So it's not only registering the app, but it's also listing the permissions that you want to expose, given that the directory cannot imagine those. You have to communicate it. And the way in which you do it is the following. I'll just show it to you. If I go back in the portal, you can see here that there is this manage manifest entry. The manifest is a JSON file which represents your application. It has all the value info that you see here in a nice UI and more. Now, that's the place where you can add your own permissions. So what you do here is you click on that manage manifest, you download the manifest, you edit it with the guidance that we give you on our samples. There is one element there called auth to permissions. Is it called that way? My memory is not what it used to be. Yes, auth to permissions. You just follow the guidance, you add your stuff in there, and you upload it. And from that moment on, Azure AD will consider your web app as a web API. And then you'll be able to select it from clients and create the entries that I described. But without further ado, I'd like to actually show you the sample. But before doing that, remember I said that when we are web APIs, we cannot use the same logic that we used for sign-in, because we don't emit 302s upon bad calls. We emit 401s and 403s. Now, that is the middleware that you use. Instead of adding the cookie, we have no cookies, so there is no mention of a cookie middleware. And we have this, like the longest name on the .NET framework, I believe. I didn't choose it. This Windows Azure Active Directory Bearer Authentication Options, which substantially just have the audience that you need and which from which tenant you expect tokens from. And this guy will do all the same stuff I described earlier, but for web APIs. So let me show you how this works with a nice sample. We want this one. So here I have, again, sample that you can find on GitHub. It's a very simple sample. It looks very much like any other JavaScript app you have ever seen on AngularJS. I have my script folder with all of the various controller script services. I have a hard reference to ADALJS because I wrote this sample before we put it on the CDN. Now it's on the CDN, so you don't need to copy it down. You can just add the link. And if you just want sign in, the only thing you need to do is go in app.js and do the following. Well, of course, you have to add the dependency to our module, which is called ADAL Angular. You have to initialize it. You pass a couple of values. One value is your tenant. Again, I need to know from which directory I want tokens from. And the other is the ID of the application. And then ignore the extra query parameters. It's just for aesthetic reasons. You don't really need it. And that's on the client, on the JavaScript. Then on the service side, this app is also a web API. And that means that I have my usual app start. And here I have exact code which I've shown in the slide. This thing is the thing that protects my API controller. And now if I just hit F5, let's see what happens. Let's close these other guys. Here I have my Italian design application in which I can, actually, I forgot to mention another thing. Sorry. Here we initialize everything, but how do we actually use this thing for protecting the system? Well, I have two ways of adding the sign-in functionality. One is to actually create a sign-in link, and this thing will call one of the methods which we expose in our JavaScript service. The other is, if I'm using the standard routes in AngularJS, is to actually choose one route, for example, this one, the to-do list, and say this require ID login equal true. That means that when I click on that route, before having access, the system will take a look at my local storage, see if there is a token. If there isn't, it will trigger a redirect. If there is, it will do all the magic with the iframe that I described. So now let's go back in here. And let's hit to-do list. And given that I was already signed in, I just got signed in because I had other tabs where I was still signed in. So I got single sign-on. And here I can add my stuff. And I'm calling my web API, which is secured for this. And I have access to information about the user, so pretty straightforward. And if I want to log out, I can also log out. One interesting side effect of this is I can close this browser, I can open it again, and I will still be signed in. Why? Because I'm using the HTML5 local storage, which survives across sessions. Technically, you are not forced to do it, but we thought it was nice. If you guys think, no, I want out, let us know, and we'll add a flip for turning this capability off. So that was single page apps. And now, finally, we are at our last part, native applications. Now, native applications are the ultimate step in the evolution. It's like the most modern thing that we are working with today. And it's like a liberating moment because we can now shed the last shred of legacy from the web. We can delete the browser. Now applications don't need to live inside a sandbox as long as they use the APIs available to the device that they are targeting. They stand on their own legs. They don't need to be within a browser. And so now we can nicely reuse all the infrastructure that we created on the server for calling APIs, but now the client can be native. Same deal that I described earlier. The only difference is that now when I use the code, I don't send credentials because I can't protect them, but it's the same deal. Also, the thing about permissions and declaring what I need to access and similar, it's all the same, so I won't repeat it. And never mind. So, as I promised, more details about ADIL. ADIL is a developer library that is used for obtaining tokens from AAD. We have many flavors of this thing, and we support .NET, Windows Store, Windows Phone, iOS with an Objective-C library, Android with a Java library. We also have a Java part on the server side, and we have Node.js. It's open source, you can contribute. If you want to add features, be my guest, please do. We are short on resources, and it's really sophisticated. Let's say that you write two lines of code, and it does all the magic that I described earlier, caching tokens, refreshing tokens, stuff like that. And this is the main interaction model. You create this object, the authentication context. You tell which directory you want to work with. And then you ask it to give you a token. And you pass a couple of parameters describing the token you want, what's the resource you want, who's the client, you. And then your authentication result is basically those three tokens that I described earlier. Actually, I described the first two. The third one is the ID token. It carries information about the user. No need to get into the details. Very straightforward, very simple. This is the C# syntax, but those concepts are the same across all the libraries. Like, you'll find the same in Objective-C and Java, but in different syntax. Now, today, exactly 1 hour ago, we announced the preview of version 3, which I'm going to show you because it's really, really cool. Now, what's the difference of the version 3 of .NET in respect to the former one? The new version is based on a portable class library. How many of you know what are possible class library? Many. Good. How many of you ever used Xamarin? All right. For everybody else, Xamarin is some kind of magic technology that allows you to take .NET and C# and run it on non-Microsoft platforms, which is amazing to me. And what this allows you to do is, if you are a C# developer, it allows you to actually write C# software and run it on non-Microsoft platforms, like iOS and Android. So let me give you a glimpse of this. Here I'm opening a solution which contains many projects. The first project is a portable class library. This portable class library is designed with ADIL v3, and it's capable of querying the directory for a specific user. And then I have five other projects which target all the platforms that I mentioned there. Those projects all use the same portable class library, Like, they don't have any authentication code of their own. I'm reusing exactly all that stuff. And to give you a glimpse of how this works, well, let me start the Android one because it takes about a minute to come up. And then as it starts, I will pick another one, like for example, this one on the desktop, and I'll just start it. Oops, I can't start it. Okay, so while this guy loads it, I will show you something which I dare say is magical, which is not only I can deploy this stuff and run it on iOS, for example, with Xamarin and with the fact that we now support the portable class libraries, I can take the Visual Studio solution, move it to the Mac, and then I can actually debug it and develop it and run it from Xamarin Studio on the Mac. And it's C#. And this is amazing to me, so I have to show you. While our Android comes up. So here I have Xamarin Studio. The code that you see here, do you see it? You don't. That's where I went in vacation in August. It was a fantastic place, but unfortunately full of Italians. So it kind of ruined the fun. But anyway, here I have exactly the solution which I developed on the Surface. I put a stick, I put it in here, and I opened it in Xamarin Studio. It's exactly the same code. And now, if I hit the counterpart of the file in here, here there is the simulator of iPhone 4, and here there is my little app. Let me search for Mario. And what you see in here is the dialog which authenticates users for Active Directory. Let me use Guido again. Did I mistype it? Of course. When I'm in a hurry. All right. The password is going to be more complicated. Don't write it down. Okay, I write it down. And when I make this finger goes, grabs a token, and ta-da, I got a token in here. I'm in iOS, I'm running from a Mac, and it's .NET code. Isn't that amazing? Well, or at least for me, it's kind of like magic. And here, let's see if Android woke up. Good morning, Android. And here I'm doing the same, as you can see here, where the app looks very similar, but it's being developed for Android. Now, you can download the sample and take a look. The only code that is in the Android application is just the UX code. And here I can do precisely the same. I want to search for Mario. If I hit search, I will get my dialogue. Of course, with its own timing, you can't rush things, otherwise you'll get nervous. Come on. Okay. Guido. Of course, I got something wrong. Oh, come on. Don't you hate when this happens? It's not the fault of the library if I can't type, so please don't take this on the library. Now you'll have a second opportunity to get my password. Pay attention. Did you get it? I'm going to change it right away. So now it goes, and it goes, and it goes. And ta-da! I said ta-da! Come on, come on, come on. Ah, look at that. Fantastic. And technically, I could try to show you the Windows ones. So I have a desktop one, I have a Windows phone one, and I have the tablet one. But those are trivial. Like, you can just download the sample and run it. It's too easy, right? And this thing is out in preview, so please give us feedback. We'd be very interested in it. We did the demo. And I hope I didn't bore you too much. Like, it's pretty late. Thank you for staying all the way. And I hope I succeeded in showing you that you can change all these various parameters, and you can, address your problem space in whatever way you want. But in the end, you are always doing the same thing, which is getting a token. And we structured both Azure Active Directory and our libraries to make it easy across the board. So whatever you want to do, we got you covered. Thank you.